This is the Education Gadfly Show.
No, just because I'm tall, like, don't ask me about the weather up here. Don't ask me about basketball. I don't do those things.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the Steph Curry of Education Reform, Alyssa Schwenk.
Well, thank you, Mike, but given that I lost a game of horse to a fourth grader yesterday, I'm not sure that moniker can really be applied, but
really?
I like it.
Is that
I like
right?
it. Wow. I did, yes. She was very good and I was very not good.
Were you more of like a center when you played basketball?
I was one of those tall kids that got asked all the time if she played basketball and then would like have a like very furious, no, just because I'm tall, like don't ask me about the weather up here. Don't ask me about basketball. I don't do those things kind
Excellent.
Of response.
Excellent.
I was not a basketball player.
So yes, the Golden State Warriors looking to break the record for most wins in a season. And I read a great article the other day about how they are doing it, about the, you know, the Silicon Valley guys mm-hmm. that bought the team and figured out that the 3-point shot was being underutilized in the NBA and
the
built
money
a
ball,
team around
if you will.
It. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this guy, Steph Curry, who seems to be just as accurate from like, you know, 30 feet as he is from 20
100 feet. 50 feet, all of the feet.
Unbelievable. Hey, it always gives, you know, short guys like me a little bit of, you know, a chance to think, boy, if we could only, if you know, we could hit shots like that.
We can engineer it. We can make it work.
Absolutely. I mean, he's not super tall, right?
No.
I mean, he's still a lot taller than me, right?
I think under 6 feet. Clara, you went to Davidson. Do you remember?
I don't recall his exact measurement. But
that's not like a graduation requirement at
no,
this point. Okay.
He is a famous graduate. Okay. Very exciting in the world of sports. But we are here to talk about the world of education reform. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about. I feel like I haven't been on the show for ages.
We've missed you around these parts.
My goodness, I've been all over the place. This week I was in beautiful Lansing, Michigan, mm-hmm. which was great. Got to testify in front of the Senate Education Committee about ESSA and mm-hmm. also talked to some folks about school reform in Detroit. A lot of things percolating out there. You know, it is fun to see some of these debates we have in our bubble here in Washington, D.C. They have those debates out there in the real world, too. They actually matter for kids. things like, you know, should we have an unfettered school choice marketplace or should we try to have some quality control? Those things are very real in a place like Detroit.
Big questions for little kids.
I like that. Nicely mm-hmm. said. Okay, Clara, let's do it. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Fordham released a study last week showing strong outcomes for CTE students, including college going and earnings. Should this put to rest the argument that CTE is at odds with college?
Well, yes, it should. That's an easy... Boy, that's a softball question. I think I may have even written it. Look,
The truth comes out.
Look, you know, we had known from some other studies, like the studies of career academies, that kids who go to these kinds of high-quality CTE programs, they can go on to graduate in higher numbers. They can go on to make more money. We found the same thing in Arkansas when we looked mm-hmm. at kids who concentrated in Arkansas. But these aren't even, you know, necessarily high-quality programs. I mean, we don't know. It just seemed like pretty mm-hmm. typical CTE stuff, that if a kid took more CTE courses, especially mm-hmm. if they concentrated in one area, they did better. But this finding, Alyssa, that they also were more likely to go to college was mm-hmm. also very interesting. It's what mm-hmm. a lot of the CTE people have been saying. When people like me have made the arguments at times that CTE is an alternative to college prep, they say, no, Mike, you don't understand. CTE is college prep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I will say the effect of concentrating on high school graduation was, I think, the biggest impact and the one that I was like most surprised and heartened by. I think it's kind of one of those things where there's this huge perception of what CTE is. And when I was talking to a few people in Arkansas, like their perception of what CTE is actually, I think, a lot different than the perception that I've kind of heard nationally, where it's like, well, of course it's college prep. Like, of course it's integrated into these yeah. like programs in high school to get kids toward, you know, a job and a career and things like that. I think the key is like really closely aligning CTE, like A, urging kids to concentrate, because that's where we saw the biggest effects mm-hmm. of kids like take multiple classes around the same kind of mm-hmm. cluster, and be like really aligning like what they're learning in high school to what they can do in college to what the needs are regionally for a career. Yeah. I think like creating that pathway is the yeah. big next step.
You know,
us.
And yet last week Ed Truss came out with a study as well that was a nice compliment to ours mm-hmm. that showed that like the vast majority of kids are just kind of sleepwalking through high school, mm-hmm. not taking CTE, not taking real college prep courses. Who knows what they're taking, mm-hmm. right? So how can we figure out a way to make sure the kids are either doing high quality CTE or a traditional college prep program or something that combines the two and try to minimize the number of kids who are doing the sleepwalking thing instead. Mm-hmm. Okay, topic number two.
Jonathan Plucker and Brandon Wright have a post on Flypaper this week with some critiques of new draft regulations for ESSA that they say are bad for high achieving kids. What gives?
Well, first of all, let me say that Jonathan and Brandon were downright polite about these regulations compared to what we heard from Senator Lamar Alexander this week, huh? He threw it down. They asked John King to come testify, Secretary King, and they went to town on him for these some of the draft regulations on supplement, not supplant, arguing that he was trying to sneak in new policies that the Congress had considered and decided against rather than sticking to the law. I mean, this looks like
spicy.
This is
exchange.
Spicy, right? I mean, this was very wonky on the one hand, but also, I mean, serious pushback. This, what does this mean? What do you think, Alyssa, this is going to unfold?
I mean, I think it's important, and I'm just, really entering the world of neg regs and draft regs and all these sorts of, negotiations about, what a law actually means. And it's really fascinating to see how the law, the bill becomes a law, to quote my favorite Schoolhouse Rock ever.
Yep.
And I think they're really finding these are critical decisions for high achievers. We have to have tests that accurately measure what they're learning, and they have to be allowed
Hold on. Let's back up on that one. Right. So so the big fireworks were over this supplement, not supplant. Mm-hmm. But this particular post that I'm supposed to be talking about by Brandon and Jonathan was about two things. Mm-hmm. One, computer adaptive testing. Mm-hmm. And the second was about allowing kids in eighth grade who are ready for advanced math coursework to take tests on those advanced math courses rather than the regular math test.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what is it that the regs, according to Jonathan and Brandon, get wrong on this?
Well, so what they're saying that the regulations get wrong are the decision that a student in a particular grade must take a test on that grade's material. So a fourth grader who, teachers and parents think, oh, they're probably at a sixth, seventh grade level, they have to take a test on fourth grade knowledge. That's not useful or helpful. A, that kid is probably bored. B, it's not giving that teacher any extra data about what that kid needs and how they can push them. And if we're hopefully, as we at Fordham want, moving toward a model where all kids' growth is measured and all kids' growth is counted, and we're focusing on more kids across all achievement spectrums, that's not going to help us go toward that model.
Absolutely. That's right. Because, you want schools and teachers to feel incentivized to help all kids make progress. But if you're not accurately measuring where kids are, then that's not going to happen. And yet the department's regs basically say, well, it's okay to do some above grade level testing, but you got to make sure you also measure grade level content, which, you only got so much time. There's only so much you can do. The eighth grade thing gets even crazier. And Lamar Alexander did bring this up. The law says very clearly, hey, if you're taking Algebra 2 in high school and in middle school, that kid can take the Algebra 2 test.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the department decides, I think the Neg Reg Committee wanted them to put in this language that said, well, you have to make sure that all kids have access to opportunities to take advanced courses. Again, one of those nice sounding things that when you unpack it, doesn't make any sense. Listen, if everybody takes advanced courses, then they're not advanced.
I also find it slightly confusing and kind of against their policy to only have kids test in grade level, because if you're creating these opportunities for kids to have more advanced options, you have to be able to test so you can show that they're ready and show that they need those opportunities. And if you can't make the case that a seventh grader in a school that maybe isn't particularly well served or maybe isn't particularly high performing should be able to have access to that class, if the data doesn't reflect that, then they can't do it.
All right. Very well said. Topic number three.
A group in New York City is suing the school district for not doing enough to keep kids safe. Is this a backlash to the current push for discipline reforms?
Oh, God.
So this is Families for Excellent Schools, which is, you could argue an outgrowth of Eva Moskowitz's Success Academies, right? That she was involved in getting this thing. These are the people that get 25,000 parents on the Brooklyn Bridge to protest whenever charter schools are at risk. Mm-hmm. And Eva's taking all this heat for disciplining kids and having rigorous discipline in her schools. I think this is a way to say, hey, we actually think discipline is important. And the real problem here is that the New York City public schools aren't doing enough to keep their kids safe.
Yeah, I think it's less a backlash to current discipline reforms and more a backlash to this particular debate that's happening in New York City around success. And, it's tricky. I've been reading about it and it's really hard for me to get a good grip. It's certainly those accounts that of what the parents are saying students in this particular lawsuit went through are just heart-wrenching. And if those things aren't being addressed, they need to be addressed point blank, period.
Yeah. And this has got to be a part of the discussion. You know, I am sometimes mischaracterized as being against any reform of school discipline. Look, I don't like zero tolerance policies. I think that was a dumb way to handle the issues that we had in our schools and take away all judgment. But I am worried about going to the other extreme. And what you have are some advocates out there saying that, you know, we should never suspend kids. We should never expel kids. We should use restorative justice, which is unproven, right? But, you know, by all means, let's try some new things. Let's evaluate it. Let's see what works. Let's figure out how we can help schools create a positive climate. Mm-hmm. And reducing the number of suspensions and expulsions could be a part of that. Mm-hmm. All fine. But the number one goal has got to be to keep kids safe, to keep schools orderly so that the vast majority of kids can learn. Mm-hmm. And we've got to, you know, so it can't all be about just what do we do to keep the disruptive kids in school if that's putting other kids at risk or they're learning at risk.
Mm-hmm. And certainly bullying is a huge, huge problem in schools these days and something that is of much discussion and worry. And we need to do something to address that.
Mm-hmm. And I think Eva feels like she's being bullied.
Oh, yeah.
By de Blasio. And by the New York Times.
It's been a very tricky and hot climate up there, that's for sure.
All right. That is all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's time for everybody's favorite, at least the last time I checked, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
I haven't been on in a while.
We've missed you. I've been here every week doing my minutes or two or three.
I don't know if you've missed me. It seems like it just goes fine.
We've missed you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Are you a basketball fan, Amber? You've been watching
this? We talked about this a little bit last week, but I wanted, of course, UVA to win.
I'm not talking about the pros, though. You're over that.
That's old news.
Thing.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, because we all lost. I'll just point that out.
I don't follow it. Okay.
Well, all right. Well, then we won't even go and do it then. Okay. All right. Fine.
Sorry.
Tell me what you got.
What do I have on the study front? A new study out by Tim Sass and colleagues that examines the effect of charter high schools on long-term attainment and earnings. This has actually been out in the field for a while. There was an older version a couple years ago. There was a working paper released by Mathematica, but it's finally out in a peer-reviewed journal, which takes years. Anyhow, the authors focus on charter high schools in Florida, where they can access a wealth of data from that lovely Florida DOE longitudinal database, which includes various demographic and achievement data for K-12 students, as well as information on students enrolled in community college and four-year universities, both inside and outside of Florida. So it's the Mac Daddy database. That's a scientific research term. Before we get to the results, let's address the biggest analytic hurdle to be overcome. What is it, Mike?
Selection bias,
meaning that charter school students, by the very act of choosing an educational alternative, are somehow different from those who attend traditional public schools. Literally, 75% of the paper is on how they handled selection bias. Right. I'm not kidding.
So this is not because these kids did not lottery into these schools.
They did not lottery in the schools, so they don't have that randomized lottery data. So they limit their sample to students who were enrolled in charter schools in eighth grade. Okay. Positing that they all possess similar unobserved characteristics, then they divide them into two groups. Treatment students who enrolled in charter schools again in ninth grade and control students who switched to traditional public schools.
Okay.
The counterfactual then is characterized by students who once chose to enroll in charter schools and not those who have never chosen them. Mm-hmm. All right.
That's decent.
Yes. And then they match them on observable baseline characteristics such as family income and eighth grade test scores. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a reasonable approach. That's what I end up saying. But now there could be back-end selection bias, right, that could occur through the comparison student's choice to exit the charter sector in eighth grade. So now they do, but they end up explaining, well, you know what? We targeted this typical transition year because we reasoned that bias is probably less significant than the initial selection into the charter sector, because now you've got all kids enrolling in a new school, regardless of whether they go to the charter sector or they go to the traditional sector. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No.
Kind of does.
I get it.
It's
sure.
a transition year for everybody.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Now, finally, the results. Okay. We got to talk about that, though, because yeah. that's important stuff.
No, it's interesting.
All right. Sure, Alyssa. Charter high school enrollment is positively linked to educational attainment. Specifically, there is a 6 percentage point increase in the likelihood of earning a high school diploma within 5 years. There's a 9 percentage point increase in the likelihood of attending college. Positive relationship between charter school attendance and college persistence, with roughly a 12 percentage point boost for charter high school students. All good news. They also see the equivalent of a 12% increase in maximum earnings at the ages of 23 to 25. Again, we're always comparing these to the charter school middle kids who transferred to the traditional school. Okay. All those comparisons. All right. Then we've got, like, I tried to get into some of this because we had some tit for tat over email and blah, 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 and the blogosphere, where some are saying, you know what? Well, prior studies have shown that charter school students in Florida haven't impacted student test scores much. But now this is really cool because perhaps they do something down the road. Right. So maybe we shouldn't care so much about test scores.
Right.
So wonky me, I dug into the literature a little bit and found that it was really mixed. I don't think we can say just ironclad that Florida charter schools aren't performing well. The Credo study even, remember, they looked at certain charter sectors in Florida. Some did better, like Miami, for instance, did pretty well. Some didn't. And then the charter, there's a charter study that Tim Sass did, who actually was a co-author of this study. And his study wasn't even that terrible in terms of the results of charter schools. And he didn't target high schools in particular. So he was just looking at all charter schools.
So, right. So like people like Jay Green have said, look, these are high schools that don't show many gains in terms of test scores, but they show these other gains, and therefore test scores might be less reliable than we thought. What you're saying is we actually don't know that these high schools did not show gains for high
and even the study that the authors themselves cite don't show that. So anyhow, their findings, and you've brought this up, their findings based on averages and kids go to specific schools. So there are follows that some are performing well in the short term and others aren't. And then sure, some particular high schools might boost short term achievement outcomes, or not do the short term, but do the long term. But anyway, the longer questions and some of these things that you were raising is like, what does this say about elementary schools, right?
Right.
Like, do we really want to judge them by their labor market outcomes?
Right.
And also, yeah, I don't think this is saying, I mean, we can't, this is one state, it's Florida, it's these particular charter schools at the high school level. It's not like we can just slap this and say, oh, this applies to every state in America.
But it does, of course, the next question is the inside the black box stuff, right? And you want to say, wow, I wonder why, what are the differences in these schools? You know, my assumptions, and this is really just based on stereotypes, is that, you know, these charter high schools are small schools, maybe a greater focus on academics, you know, the kids choosing to go back to the traditional public school sector. They want to have the big, you know, traditional high school experience, the sports and everything else, the kids who stay in the charter schools are giving up something. I mean, maybe they might have sports teams, but maybe not, you know, the selection that you're going to have at a big comprehensive high school, but maybe there's more focus. There's more targeting. Who knows? I mean, it's like, we got to go to Florida now and take a look what's happening inside these schools.
Walk in with a magnifying glass. I guess my question is, so there's no, or they weren't able to draw any connections between quality of the school and whether that had a more concentrated impact on, or a more concentrated effect on college going and
quality as judged by test scores.
Fair point. Okay.
Right. It's a little circular.
No, because their sample is all, it's the sample, right? They can't they can't get results broken down at the high school level. They want enough kids.
That's right. Small in size. Too small.
See,
that's
Amber, I have learned from this. Years of doing this program is really just a ploy to get me to learn a little bit about research methodology.
Right. I always feel bad when I got to get in the weeds a little bit on the methods, but that selection bias, it's tricky.
But hey, you know what? Another study finding strong outcomes for charter high schools. There is now a very impressive literature on that from what now Florida plus Chicago, I think some other places. This is exciting. Let's not overlook that overall fact that when people say the research is mixed on charter schools, you got to say, it's either neutral or positive for the most part.
No harm.
All right, good. Well, that's all the time we've got for today. Until next week.
I'm Alyssa Schwenk.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.